This is Ozarks at Large. Sam Totten has spent much of his life studying genocide. He's traveled to and interviewed survivors of genocide in Rwanda and Darfur. His most recent book, Genocide by Attrition, The Nuba Mountains, Sudan, provides historical background on the genocidal actions in the Nuba Mountains. Sam Totten has been trying to raise awareness of the crisis there through various channels.
There are people dying. There are people literally starving to death right now. There are other people who have died from attacks via the government of Sudan bombers and land troops. But there are 200 to 300,000 people in the Nuba Mountains seeking sanctuary from these bombing attacks. And they've been up there now since, a full year, since July 2011. And since around February, people have begun straggling across the border into South Sudan. They've been suffering, they're suffering from malnutrition, but that's escalated now since they've been, many people have been in the mountains many, many more months. People are now suffering severe malnutrition and literally starvation. And many, many people have starved and are starving as they try to make their way to the refugee camps.
Many of the stories that we do know of come from these refugees who have been able to survive and get to the refugee camps?
They've come from the refugees. They've come from some of the journalists who have made their way up into the Nuba Mountains. One of the most noted journalists, Nicholas Kristof with the New York Times. Ann Curry has gone up there. I'm not sure if Ann Curry actually saw people starving to death, but Nicholas Kristof did, and also from members of non-governmental organizations and religious organizations. For example, Franklin Graham, Billy Graham's son, who founded an organization called Samaritan's Purse and had projects all over Sudan and has pulled them all since the bombing began in July. He was up there about 2 months ago. He saw people literally starving to death as well.
He's written and discussed this?
He has. In fact, he wrote a very powerful article in the Washington Times, not the Washington Post, but the Washington Times, at the end of which he urged President Obama to open up a humanitarian corridor to try to get food up to these people who are starving to death virtually every day.
And Nicholas Kristof has written in the New York Times about it.
Exactly. And he, too, has urged President Obama to act, primarily because in March there were rumors that President Obama was considering supporting a humanitarian corridor. And, of course, Kristof also has urged the United Nations to step up and act as well to prevent mass starvation.
But yet, this internationally, nationally, still seems to be a story that has a hard time getting traction.
It is. I think if most people look in major newspapers today, I mean, whether you consider it, you know, the New York Times, the Washington Post, Christian Science Monitor, LA Times, you'll find, of course, many, many, many more articles on Syria, on the situation in Egypt, situation in Libya or Tunisia. But yeah, the Sudan, but even Darfur, which is continuing to have major problems, and the Nuba Mountains and the Blue Nile region, you don't read much at all. And if you read anything about Sudan, it's often the conflict between the two states, Sudan and the new country of South Sudan.
Any theories why that is? I mean, obviously, Syria and Egypt and Tunisia, these are newsworthy events as well.
Certainly. I think part of it is that, and this is conjecture on my part, part of it is Syria has been so violent, and it's in a part of the world where that is so volatile. I mean, we the United States, certainly have interests there, and we, I think, as a nation, we're always concerned about what's going to happen in regard to Israel, and certainly then Iran with their nuclear wars, and that's been so explosive. I can understand that. I can certainly understand the focus on Egypt as well. I mean, with the arrest of Mubarak and the change of regimes and whether it's going to go democratic or Islamic. And the same is true, of course, in these other nations that are experiencing the Arab Spring. I think the focus, I think over the years, the media seems to focus on those issues that seem to capture people's attention. And, you know, starvation doesn't, for the most part, until you see the bodies of the babies and the people and you know, where their ribs are sticking out. We're moving in that direction. My fear is, by the time we focus on this issue, when you start seeing those bodies, and they're starting to be seen, many, many thousands, if not tens of thousands, will have been died. So this is kind of a silent death. And along with that, it seems that the international community is blind to it.
I ask you this every time we talk. What can be done?
Well, and I'm glad you do, because that's really the question. I think a lot of things could be done. First of all, I think constant pressure needs to be placed on the United Nations, on the United States government, to open a humanitarian corridor. Now, there was talk of this, as I mentioned, in March, and both the government of the United States and the UN knew that they had to open this corridor prior to May when the rains came, because once the rains come, the roads are nearly impassable. So the rainy season lasts from May until mid-October. So right now it's very, very difficult. But there was ample time to open that corridor. It wasn't done. So the first thing is incessant pressure to be applied to the United States government and the UN to open that corridor. And again, I'm not talking about U.S. troops going in. I'm not talking about U.S. airplanes going in. Simply that President Obama, who has talked time and time again about his concern with genocide and potential genocide and the prevention of genocide, that he used his position as a bully pulpit to place pressure on the UN, the UN Security Council, to act to save these people. So that's number one. Number two is that people in the United States, Europe, and elsewhere help the refugees from the Nuba Mountains who are now residing in different places around the United States. There's a large contingent in Nebraska, another one in Virginia, another one in Colorado, another one in the South, I think, Georgia. Periodically, these people do come together. They have rallies. In fact, I understand that this very day in Washington, D.C., there's a rally in front of the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. Nuba Mountains people are there. And the reason they chose today is that the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum is having a special symposium on the prevention of genocide. Is it possible? And these people, the Nuba Mountains people, are there saying, you're discussing this issue, and yet the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum has done little to nothing to help bring attention to this current crisis. So that's one. The other is, I think that those individuals who are concerned about the Nuba Mountains people and know that they're starving to death each and every day, it's estimated that between 25 and 40 people are dying each day on the way to the refugee camps. And how many are dying daily up in the mountains, nobody seems to know. Something needs to be figured out so that food can start to get up there. And what I mean by that is, individual citizens need to figure out how to do that. I realize that sounds like pie in the sky, but there are individuals, I think, who are willing to figure out how that can be done. And that's not to say that they will save all that many people. I think what they do is they show that it can be done, that there's a will that it will be done, and if nothing else, shame the international community into possibly acting sooner rather than later.
I was party to some discussion on email that you had with other people this summer. I don't know how much you want to talk about this or not talk about this. When you were considering trying to get more publicity, you've become very frustrated at times. There are people dying,
right,
and it's hard to get our attention.
Yeah, very frustrated.
And there was interesting discussion between you and other people who are concerned about this. And there even seems to be in those of you who know the most about Nuba Mountains, there even seems to be a frustration about we can't figure out how, because there are physical limitations. There are dangers to getting food, to getting people out.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I brought up a whole host of issues. I mean, one of the early ones that you may be aware of is I suggested that individuals actually carry out a hunger strike in front of either the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum or as close to Congress as possible. And I would say that probably 95% of the people, and considered both scholars and activists, looked askance at that. They said, you really think that that's going to accomplish anything? And my point was, it wasn't a one-shot deal. It was going to be sustained, where people committed to doing that and actually doing it in a sensible way. And what I mean by that is making sure that we had the right solutions so that we were not damaging our organs, but ultimately having to go to the hospital and then seeking the attention of the media. But that was shot down. There's no doubt about it. As far as getting the food in, again, every single argument you could think of has been thrown at this group that's now thinking about doing that, from the cost to the dangers, to whether it's really the food is really going to help anybody, or if it's just simply going to be a drop in an ocean. If it's a one-shot deal, it's pointless. The naivete thinking that this small group of individuals will get food in there and then think that they will apply pressure to the international community. So There are lots of different opinions, and that's part of the frustration, because even amongst those people that want to do something, they begin to argue back and forth what to do, and ultimately it seems nothing is done.
Nobody, excluding a despot, a totalitarian regime, or a dictator, nobody is for the starving of people.
Oh, except for a despot. Yeah,
right.
Exactly, sure.
So so often when these situations become more well-known, people say, why don't we do more? Why didn't? What does it take to get us as a world population to get beyond this?
It's frustrating, and I think we've had this discussion before, and we'll certainly have it again, I'm sure. And, you know, part and parcel of this whole problem is realpolitik, that, again, and I think we discussed this last time, is that when nations, basically governments, look out for their own good, which is understandable, and they take actions and make decisions based on what is good policy for them, and if an action is not going to enhance their situation, or if it's going to damage it, then you know, they'll think twice. And in this case, governments know that Omar al-Bashir, the president of Sudan, has stated very clearly that no organization outside of Sudan will be allowed to open a humanitarian corridor. And instead, he said, what we'll do is we'll have the local Red Cross. It's not the Red Cross, but basically the same sort of organization, send the food in. And the problem with that, of course, is that the government will control that. They'll be able to reach the people. They'll be able to collect intelligence on where the people are and maybe where the rebel groups are. So that's not really feasible in regard to helping the people. But the larger point is the international community fears that if it opens a humanitarian corridor against the wishes of Omar al-Bashir, then there's going to be a problem, war. And so that's where realpolitik comes in. Nobody wants to go to war with Omar al-Bashir. Plus, as we've talked before, Russia has a huge arms deal with Sudan, and China has a huge arms deal and takes a lot of the petroleum out of Sudan. So we know that when a decision is made internationally at the UN Security Council, that the permanent five, China, France, Great Britain, and the United States, did I leave one out?
In Russia,
yes, thank you, all have a veto. And if one of those countries vetoes that decision, the resolution is dead. And so there we are. That's realpolitik and the way the UN operates.
Sam, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Sam Todden is a genocide scholar and professor at the University of Arkansas. His latest book is titled Genocide by Attrition, Nuba Mountain, Sudan, and was published 2 weeks ago. He's also written several editorials about the matter for newspapers across the country. If you want to know more, he suggests putting the names of the newspapers the Sudan Tribune or South Sudan News into a search engine, or into a search engine, you can put the title End Nuba Genocide Campaign. This is Ozarks at Large.